already, at the very least, is the beginning of the move forwards, upwards and outwards of Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Until now, things have only been going backwards or nowhere. But from Va'era, they will begin to mobilize. And after the original setback, where Paro only made things worse for Bnei Yisrael and Moshe, and took the step of complaining on their behalf to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have the famous forecast of the formula for the way the Jewish people will be taken out of Mitzrayim. And they are the Arba Lashonos of Geula. In Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav, Lachain, Emor Levnei Yisrael Ani Hashem, V'hotzeisi eschem mitachas siblos Mitzrayim, I will take you out from the burdens of Mitzrayim, V'hitzalti eschem me'avudosam, save you from their work, V'go'alti eschem, redeem you, and then V'lokachti eschem li'la'am, with of course V'hevesi coming in at number 5. And as we know, there is a great deal of discussion that accompanies these Arba Lashonos of Geula. It happens to be that much of the discussion of these four expressions is accompanied by 4 cups of wine, and therefore it is not always clear what was said looking back with full recollection. All the more reason to talk about it in a neutral environment, a controlled setting. And indeed, we have discussed this on a number of occasions. What exactly is the 4-pronged process of, or 4-stage process of V'hotzeisi, V'hitzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lokachti? And I must say, I came across this year an approach to these Arba Lashonos shel Geula, which I found to be very elegant, and I believe resonates in a way that we will see is very profound. And it's to be found in the writings of Rav Hirsch in his Perush on the Chumash. And Rav Hirsch says something that as soon as he opens up the window, it seems to be very clear what he's saying. I mean, his spark was to look at things in that way. Whenever we talk about the Geula from Mitzrayim, redemption from Egypt, so that is the reversal of Galus Mitzrayim, of our exile, of our tribulations there. Galus Mitzrayim was forecast from the very beginning, when Avraham Avinu is yet 70 years old in the Brisbane Avisorim, and that's in Bereishis Perek Tesvav, and we know the Psukim well. Yodoa Teda, Kigeri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lahem, your descendants will be Gerim, they will be strangers, Be'eretz Lo Lahem. Va'avodum Ve'inu Osam, and they will be enslaved, and they will be afflicted, Arba Be'oshana. That is the forecast for Golus Mitzrayim. Then, of course, things will turn around. V'gamas ha'goyash yavodud on anochi. However, says Rav Hirsch, so let us take these component parts one by one, for there are 3 of them. Gerus, ger yezarecha, to be a stranger, to be an alien. Va'avodum, servitude. And ve'inu osam, and affliction. And torment. And if we understand that there are 3 increasing levels of the difficulty in Mitzrayim, so then when we come to consider the reversal or Yetzias Mitzrayim, we will intuit that it will constitute the undoing, the systematic undoing of those levels of the Bris Ben Avisarim. And with this in mind, says Rav Hirsch, let us look again. The first thing that is said is V'hotzeisi eschem, again if we have the words in front of us in Pasuk Vav, V'hotzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. The Jewish people will be taken out from Siblos. What is the word Siblos? How does it translate? Burdens. Sevel is to bear something. Savlanut is to be patient, or the lack thereof. And when we try and get a context of the word Siblos, it's a very amorphous term. Burdens. Everyone has burdens. And if you're a servant, so then you certainly have burdens. So what is the specific connotation of Siblos Mitzrayim? Well, let us see. If we go back to Parshas Shemos, in the very beginning, so the Pasuk states, and this is in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayosimu alav sarei misim, they placed their tax masters, Lema'an anoso bisivlosam. That is to say, the first time we see the expression of sivlos, of burdens, they are the additional burdens that are a source of pain for the Jewish people. And this is no longer an issue of being an eved, of having to work. I mean, many people have to work, and if you're an eved, you have to work harder. But the pain, the affliction, which came through the excessive taxation, which was discriminating against the Jewish people and draining on them, that is sivlosom as an application of lema'an anoso. What we see from that pasuk is that the sivlos, the color of the word sivlos, is an expression of all of the affliction, of all of the pain of the Jewish people. And if that's true, says Rav Hirsch, and of course ve'inu osam is level 3 of the Bris Ben Abisarim. The first stage of the Geula will be to take things down from level 3. And thus the pasuk says, ve'otzeis yeschem mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim. The first thing that will be taken off is Sivlos, which represents the Inu Osam. And therefore the Bris Ben Abisarim has moved down a notch. Where are we now? Well, prior to the Inu Osam, stage 2 is Va'avodim, the fact that the Jewish people they are indemnified, they need to work for the Mitzrayim. The taking away of that level is the second expression, which could not be clearer, V'hitzalti eschem me'avodosom. The undoing of va'avodum is v'hitzalti eschem me'avodosom. And now, where does that leave B'nai Yisrael? So what's fascinating, and we've noted this in the past in a number of different angles, that the third expression of Geula is very different than the first two. Because the first two are vectors. That is to say, the first thing, v'hotzeisi v'hitzalti, or v'hotzeisi from X, v'hitzalti from X, right? V'hotzeisi mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, v'hitzalti eschem me'avodosom. The third one, v'ga'alti, doesn't say from what, but rather it says how. Because the pasuk states, v'ga'alti eschem bizroa netuya uvishvatim gedolim. So it's interesting because the qualifying words are not ge'ula from something or towards something, but rather just the way that the ge'ula will be. And the question is, how did the expression of ge'ula, why is it more appropriate to discuss the way that it will happen, and why is that called ge'ula? So Rav Hirsch says, and of course all of Rav Hirsch, certainly when it comes to the Parshas of Shemos, he's really talking about the Jew in Golos. At any given time. And being a ger, in a sense, is its own form of discomfort. As if to say, not that anyone's oppressing you, and not that you have to work for someone. We're not talking about those higher levels. But just the very fact that you're a ger, it means that you are a lower class citizen. It means that if something would happen to you, you get the feeling that no one would care. In other words, the system will not look out for you. You can't really claim the natural rights of the ezrach, of the naturalized citizen, who has the entire machinery of the law on his side. A ger, if a ger goes missing here and there, no one really gets upset. It doesn't make the news, certainly not the front page. And therefore, and this is a connotation of gerus, which is interesting, because normally we speak about gerus time-wise. It's temporary. Lagur right? Ba'aretz banu, we're only here for a short while. But of course, what is true time-wise is also true
weight-wise. In other words, as surely as a gear is someone who's only there for a short while, a gear is a type of person who's only there a little bit. He's not an important person. As Yaakov himself said to Esau when he wanted to make peace with him, he said, "In Lavan Garti," Rashi says, "I was a gear. I never became the mayor. Right? I never became an important person. I was a lightweight personality." A gear is always a lightweight personality. This was before the concept of overcompensation for discriminating against minorities, or at least certain minorities. In the good old days, a gear was a gear, and that's the feeling. That's already part of Golos. And if that's true, says Rav Hirsch, so what's interesting is the geula from Geirus, because if Geirus is the feeling that you don't count, you're not important, no one cares about you, and if someone, if something would be stolen from you, they wouldn't care. So the geula from Geirus is more the way that the Yetzias Mitzrayim will happen. Zroa Netuya, of course, which is a classic phrase that accompanies Yetzias Mitzrayim. Zroa Netuya. Zroa Netuya, as its name literally suggests, the outstretched arm, means everything happened in that year of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It was a complete upheaval of the natural order for the benefit of the Jewish people. And there is no greater geula from Geirus, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself overturns the nature of the world for your behalf, because the message is these people do count. That's B'nei B'chori Yisrael. B'zroa Netuya, there will be a series of miracles for them, u'b'shvatim gedolim, and anyone who wronged them will be brought to justice over them, which doesn't always happen to a ger. And therefore, these three things, it rings true once you see Rav Hirsch has just paved the way, that Rotsesi, Vitzalti, Vigalti is the undoing of correspondingly Ve'inu Osam, Va'avodim, and Ger Yazaracha. And once that's true, of course, Ve'lokachti Eschem Li La'am is actually post Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ve'lokachti Eschem Li La'am is the Jewish people are now ready to be brought towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his people, which of course is Matan Torah. And that's why Pesach leads straight into Shavuos, right? It's joined through the days of the Omer. That's the fourth Lashon. So these are the words of Rav Hirsch, and what's interesting is, from there, from the sweeping view of the four expressions of Geula, I would like to take a look at a more micro issue here, and that is the word Sivlos again. Now, what's noteworthy about the word Sivlos? That it appears twice in two successive psukim. They are in Pasuk Vav, we've mentioned already, Vehotzeisi Eschem Mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim, from under the burdens of Mitzrayim. And then, in Pasuk Zayin, after number 4, Velokachti Eschem Li La'am, Vayisi Lachem Lelokim, Vidatem, Ki, and then you will know, Ki Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Hamotzi Eschem Mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim. So once again, we have the concept of Sivlos Mitzrayim in the beginning, read Vehotzeisi Mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim, and at the end. Okay, what's noteworthy about that? If you look carefully, and it's not enough to listen carefully, you have to look carefully, you will see that the word Sivlos is not written in the same way on these two occasions. For the correct spelling, of course, it is the plural, and therefore, Samach Beis Lama, there should be a Vav right before the Taf, and indeed, that is how it's written in Pasuk Zayin, Mitacha Sivlos Mitzrayim, but in Pasuk Vav, Vehotzeisi Eschem Mitacha Sivlos Mitzrayim, there is no Vav. And that's an interesting question that caught the attention of Rabbi Yosef Salant, the Be'er Yosef. It's the same word, the contrast is there, two consecutive psukim, with a Vav and not with a Vav, and what's it all about? So the Be'er Yosef draws our attention, or directs us back to an earlier pasuk, and this is last week's parsha when HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Moshe at the Sneh, and that's in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Zion. And if we take a look at that pasuk, it will open up to the beginning of the parsha for us. The Perek Gimel, Pasuk Zion. Vayomer Hashem, this is Hashem, he's talking to Moshe at the Sneh. Ra'o-ra'isi es ani ami asher b'mitzrayim. I have seen the poverty, the dire situation of my people in Mitzrayim. Ve'tzakasam shamati mipnei noksav. I've heard their cries because of their oppressors. Ki yodati es machovav, for I know their pain. That's the pasuk. And the next is, I will deliver them from Mitzrayim, and the whole thing will begin. And the Be'er Yosef asked a simple question, and it's a question that we always need to ask whenever we come across these double expressions. Because once again, Pasuk Zion states, Ra'o Ra'isi. How could we translate that into English? It's essentially impossible. You could try. I have surely seen. You have no choice, right? I have surely seen. Okay. But of course, everything that God does is surely anyway, and rarely are they repeated. Ra'isi es ani ami. What is the double expression of ra'o ra'isi? That's the first point. And in fact, that's enough in terms of the question. That's what he'll be dealing with. The truth is, as we know from many Mefarshim, the areas or the domains of damage that the Jewish people sustained in Mitzrayim were twofold. Temporal, that is to say physical, and spiritual. Physical, of course, needs no elaboration, needs no commentary. The psukim are full of it. I mean, they are worked to the bone, and their lives are embittered, and life is difficult for them. But of course, alongside of that, we know that they are also deteriorating, and they're disintegrating. Spiritually, you have these terrible descriptions of the Jewish people, not only that from the Navi onwards, the Navi Yechezkel, they're involved in Avodah Zorah, and the famous statement at the Kriyas Yamsuf, Halala Ovdei Avodah Zorah, Halala Ovdei Avodah Zorah, the Jewish people are in a sorry state. There's the well-known statement of the Arizal, they descended to the 49th level of Tumah. That is as low as one can go if one is planning on ever coming back. And the Jewish people need to be delivered from that. How do these things go together is another question. Which of these was the primary focus of the Egyptians? Was one just a byproduct of the other? Or was it a programmatic assault on the spiritual status of the Jewish people? Maybe that was more bothersome than anything else. Be that as it may, and of course these are the two signs, as the Yalkut tells us, that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown as he's sent towards Mitzrayim. The first is the snake. His staff turned into a snake. And the second is his hand turned into a Mitzora. It says the Yalkut Shimoni, these are the two signs that are condemning Egypt. Because they are guilty on both counts. And when a snake bites, it kills. Kipshuto. I mean, they are destroying the Jewish people physically. And a leprous hand is Tommy. And they've contaminated the Jewish people. And on those two counts, they now need to undergo a reckoning. So the Jewish people have sustained damage on these two fronts. But what's very interesting, and which of course we know to be true, is there's a very different reaction that a person has to a physical problem than to a spiritual problem. It's self-defining. That is to say, if a person has a physical problem, if they are in pain, so a symptom of physical pain is that you feel physical pain. If a person has a spiritual ailment, so a symptom of spiritual damage is you don't feel spiritual pain. And in fact, that's symptomatic of a spiritual problem, is that you are unsensitive to matter spiritual. So you have no problem. And that's your problem. So the definition of a physical burden is one that you feel. And the definition of a spiritual burden is one that's caused you not to feel any spiritual problems. Everything's fine. Hakol mutarim lach, hakol shiruim lach. And this is the state of the Jewish people. So what's interesting is if you would ask, it's a sad commentary, but it's important for us to learn for our times. So if you would ask the Jewish people at the time of, as they are undergoing the crushing existence in Mitzrayim, if you'd ask them, do you have a problem? They would say yes, and they'd point to their taskmaster. He's my problem. But the truth is they have two problems, and one of them they're not aware of. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, to go back to that pasuk, Ra'o Ra'isi. There are two visions. Ra'o Ra'isi es aniyam b'Mitzrayim. I see them in two ways, because they are impoverished in two domains, the physical and the spiritual. Now the question is, well, how many of them are they aware of? So how does the pasuk continue? Ve'tzakasam shamati. I've heard them cry out. Why are they crying out? Mipnei noksav. Because of their oppressors. In other words, they're only sensitive to one of their problems. They're being oppressed. Noksav. Is that the only thing wrong with them? No, there's more than that, but they don't even know it. Ki yodati es machavav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm the only one who's aware of just how much damage they're sustaining, because it's a symptom of a certain type of damage that they don't recognize it anymore. Now, all of this will bring us back to the Arba Lashonos of Geula. As we know, whenever a word in Lashon HaKodesh is written in the plural, but it's written without a vav, so it is written as if it could be pronounced in the singular, and sometimes is to be understood that way. Certainly al derech hadrash, even al derech halacha, when it comes to the arba minim, as we know, we take one lulav. Ulakachtem lachem beyom rishon priyetz hadar kapos tamarim. Now kapos tamarim is written chaser. It's written kapas, and it's a combination of those things that gives us the one branch that has many leaves. But because it is written without a vav, it is darshaned as kapas, and we only take one lulav. And there are many examples of this, as we know. And therefore, says the Be'er Yosef, so take a look at what happens as the Jewish people are being delivered. The pasuk states, I will take you out from your burdens. The word is sivlos. It's in the plural. Why is it in the plural? Because there are two types of sivlos. There's two types of burdens, two types of oppression, physical and spiritual. But it's written without a vav, with a connotation of a singular. And the reason why is because the Jewish people, at the time that they will be taken out, will only realize and only appreciate one type of sevel that they're being extricated from, which is the physical. And if you would say to them, were you in trouble? Yes. How many types of trouble were you in? Well, how many types are there? There's only one type. Noksav, my oppressor, and now I'm free from him. And that's the mindset of the Jewish people. But the irony is, as they become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as we move into V'lokachti Eschem Lila'am, an amazing thing will happen. The Jewish people will look back on Mitzrayim and will actually come to appreciate that they were in much greater danger than they realized, or they were in different type of danger than they could have appreciated at the time. Because having had a taste of what it means to be Am Hashem, and now look back at this, at the existence that we had in Mitzrayim, we'll realize that we were under more than one type of oppression. And that's why in the next pasuk, after V'lakachti Eschem Lila'am, after they've been rehabilitated as a people, B'idatem, then you'll know, look back, Yani Hashem Elokeichem, Hamotzi Eschem, Mitachas, Sivlos Mitzrayim, with a vav, then you'll appreciate that you really were in two types of trouble and delivered from both of them. So that's a fascinating lesson. And of course, Kedarka Shel Torah, I mean, so much about the symptomatic description of a spiritual problem is learned from a single letter that was not written in the Torah. That's how the Be'er Yosef is teaching us to learn from it. Now, I'd like to move from here to discuss one of the Makos. Of course, we have seven of the ten in Parshas Va'era, but let us perhaps focus in the beginning of Perek Tes, Makas Dever, and see what the psukim yield for us. And there are many different angles to look at the psukim. First comes the warning. Some of the plagues were preceded by a warning, some of them were not. Generally, as in terms of Tetzach Hadash Ba'achav, the first two were, the third one was not. So Dever is in the middle of the second set, and Paro was warned. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Boa Paro, come to Paro v'dibar Torah, tell him, Koma Hashem elokei ha'ivrim, shalach esami v'ya'avduni. Let them go, that they may serve me. Because if you don't, if you refuse, there will be the plague. There will be the plague against the livestock, the animals of the Egyptians. Now, before we even begin to discuss the parameters of Makas Dever, we should note a very interesting shaila. And that is that the warning, as we mentioned, some of the plagues are preceded by a warning. The warning that precedes the plague of Dever is unique. How so? Every single plague is preceded with the words, go to Paro, wherever he may be, in his palace or by the Nile, and go to him, v'amar to'ilav, and say to him, shalach esemi v'yavduni, or something like that. The exception is Dever. For the Pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, bo al Paro, come to Paro, v'dibarta elav, ko amar Hashem shalach esemi v'yavduni. That's very interesting. It's unique. All of the other makos of Omar Toilov. And this one is V'dibar Toilov. And therefore, there are certain Meforshim who raise the question, Manishtana Hamaka Zemi Kol Hamakos. That it is introduced with V'dibarta as opposed to V'omarta. We can appreciate it's a subtle question. But I believe there is a great deal behind it. And actually, let us begin by referring to one of the classic Perushim on the Haggadah, who addresses Dever as it receives a special mention. When do we talk about Dever during Haggadah Shel Pesach? Well, of course, we have the list of 10, Dam Svardeyon, Dever takes its place, number 5. But Dever also has an honorary mention elsewhere in the Haggadah. How so? For the Pasuk says, as we know, we darshan aramiya ve'davi, we take every phrase and we attach a certain explanation for it. Vayotzienu Hashem, elokeinu misham, b'yad chazaka, v'zroa netuya, uba'osus uba'mosim, etc. Says the Haggadah, b'yad chazaka, zo ha-dever. If you want to know what yad chazaka is, that's dever. Now, I think by that point, in Magid, we've eased off on the wholesale discussions, and we're more or less being drawn to the matzah and the morrow. But it's an interesting shaila. Of all the things to say, no one knows what Yad Chazaka means anyway. Yad Chazaka, strong hand. And now the Haggadah says, you know what Yad Chazaka means? It means Dever. How does it mean Dever? I mean, Dever's one of them. I'm sure they're all as bad as each other. And I would even posit that they would be successively worse than each other. So how did Dever become Yod Chazaka? So, of course, we understand that the Haggadah is trying to make sure that we do not leave Seder night with no idea of what the words Yod Chazaka mean. They're the two biblical expressions, Yod Chazaka is Zroa Netuya. They sound so amazing, no one, you could forget to really ask what any of them mean. The strong hands and the outstretched arm. What does Yad Chazaka mean? We've mentioned in the past that Yad Chazaka, and this is a very sobering comment of the Netziv in his Perush to the Haggadah, Imre Shefer, that as we know, there were many of the Jewish people who weren't interested in coming out. They were not interested in pursuing their part in the destiny as the Jewish people. They preferred to stay in Mitzrayim. And they were killed out during the 3 days of darkness. That's a terrible subsection of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yod Chazaka, says the Netziv, the strong hand, the strength was directed against the Jewish people, because the Jewish people themselves did not all wish to come out. When we say Avodim Ayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim and Hashem took us out B'Yad Chazaka, that means that pressure had to be applied to the Jewish people, because better the devil you know than the devil you don't. So it's tough in Mitzrayim, but it's home, and it's familiar. And Paro needs us. Avodim Ayinu Leparo. We always saw ourselves as Paro's most loyal citizens. So it's not right to leave. The Yod Chazaka was the force directed against the Jewish people. And therefore, says the Netziv, and the Aruch HaShulchan, by the way, they were both said the same thing in the Perushim on the Haggadah. When we say B'yod Chazaka Zu Hadever, it's not plague number five. It's not the plague against the Jew, against the Egyptians. It's the Dever against those who insisted on staying, those four-fifths who didn't want to come out. That's Yod Chazaka. Now, that's something we've mentioned in the past. It's important to remember the symptoms of Golos in case they ever repeat themselves, as they do. But Rabbi Chiel Heller, in his Peirush, Or Yeshorim, to the Agodah Shel Pesach, explains differently. Yod Chazaka, once again, it's such a vague sounding term, the strong hand. What does it refer to? There are many Mefarshim who say that Yod Chazaka refers to the removal of the Bechira of Paro. That's the strong hand. It was done in a heavy-handed way. That means at a certain point, Paro has no choice, as indeed the Pasuk says, Vanochi Akshe Eslev Paro. That's the Yod Chazaka. And in fact, that's why things moved backwards at the end of Parshas Shemos. Things got worse. And the reason why things got worse is because now Paro feels that he's in a position of power. When he feels in a position of power, he will never back down. And that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now you will see what will happen. Ki b'yod chazaka yigar shei me'ato. In other words, now the Yod Chazaka is able to be activated because Paro thinks he can't fail. His heart is already hardened to a certain degree. B'yod chazaka. However, there is a medrash. It's a well-known medrash, and the Rishonim quote it and talk about it, because the question is, did Paro ever have a chance? If you hardened his heart and happened to be punished for saying no, and this is the question of the Rambam in the Hilchos Tshuva and many others, and there are many responses to this. But there is a medrash which both Rashi and the Ramban quote, that actually there is a certain mida keneged mida, namely that of the 10 plagues, for the first 5 plagues it's Paro who hardened his heart. And then part of his punishment is midah keneged midah, that for the last 5, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardens his heart. In other words, his heart is hardened as midah keneged midah, for hardening his own heart. Now, if you look closely at the psukim, you will see that medrash needs yet to be understood very well, if you follow the psukim. But nonetheless, according to the Ramban, this is the definitive explanation as to how it was that Paro's heart was hardened. And therefore... Says Rabbi Chiel Heller so beautifully, that is the intent of the Baal HaGadol. Because Makas Dever is the 5th plague. And if that's true, then Makas Dever brings with it actually two problems for Paro. Number one, plague number 5. Number two, from this point onwards, if he hardens his heart, it is the harboring of HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardening his heart for the next 5. Otherwise known as Yod Chazaka. That's why the Haggadah says, Ubi Yod Chazaka Zu Hadever. Because the modus operandi of Yod Chazaka, referring to the heart, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardening Paro's heart, that came with the Dever. Because that was in the wake of plague number 5, if he didn't react to it correctly. That being the case, I think we can come back and see that actually the Pasuk itself has referred to this. How so? For we know the difference between the two terms of Dibur and Amira. Dibur always represents Loshon Kosha. It's something which is harsh or intense. When Yosef speaks to his brothers, Diber ha'ish Adonai ha'aretz itonu koshos. Amira, on the other hand, has the connotation an easygoing nice, softer connotation. Amira raka, kotomer lebeis Yaakov. And therefore, I think everything that Rabbi Chil Heller has said about what came along with Dever is the reason why the Torah introduces the warning of Dever not with the word V'amarta, but with the word V'dibarta. As if to say, none of the plagues are pleasant, but there is an additional intensity that comes with the warning from Makas Dever, because it's a twofold warning. Because if you do not react correctly here, not only will there be Dever, but everything else will change from that point on, B'yod Hazaka, and therefore there is more at stake, and the warning becomes all the more critical, and that is reflected by the upgrading in intensity from V'amarta, which, as it is with other plagues, to V'dibarta. So what's in a word? I think that nuance from V'amarta V'dibarta really gives us this the shift in atmosphere as we move into the second set of five plagues. Now, what is predicted? Pasuk Gimel. Hinei Yad Hashem Hoyob Miknecha. Hashem's hand will be against your Miknecha Shebasadeh, right, all of your livestock. This is the only one of the 10 plagues that the concept of Yad Hashem is used. Famously, in number 3, Etzba Elokim is used, and that gives us all many cheshbonos for a Seder night again. And here, and that's the Mitzrim said that, and here Moshe says, Hine Yad Hashem Hayob Miknecha, the reason why it's called Yad Hashem, says the Zohar Kodesh, is because there will be five streams that emanate, or five targets of the Dever, as the Pasuk enumerates them, Basusim, Bachamarim, Bagwalim, Babakaru, Batson, and therefore those five fingers, so to speak, are the expressions of Yad Hashem, Hoya, B'miknecha. Now, there's an important question that needs to be dealt with here. For who was impacted and affected by Makas Dever? Pasuk Vav says, Vayas Hashem es hadavar hazeh mimachras, Vayomas kol miknei Mitzrayim. All of the livestock of Mitzrayim died. That's it. That's the end of that. Now, that would be the end of that, were it not for the fact that there are at least two more plagues that are targeted against the livestock of the Egyptians. And they are, well, Shchin is yet there, which is in Perek Pasuk Yud, it's the very next plague. Vayhi Shechin Ababuos Pareach Ba'odom Uvabahema. So the next Makkah affects all the Behema. Our question is, well, you know, which Behema? I thought they were all wiped out in Dever. It says, the Pasuk told us, Vayomas Kol Miknei Mitzrayim. And then moreover, in Pasuk Kaf, as we move into Barad, so it says, Pasuk Yutes, Shalach Ha'ezes Miknecha, bring in the livestock. It's called Shalach Ha'basode. Kol Ha'odam Va'behema, Sheimatze Basode. B'lo Yosef Ha'baisa, V'yorad Aleim Ha'barad. So any livestock that are yet in the field, they will be killed. And once again, our question is, well, which livestock? I mean, they seem to have made a quick recovery. I mean, this is just one or two, a couple of months afterwards, and they were all wiped out in Dever. And here we will see that there is a difference in approach between Rashi and the Ramban. It is a pure Parshanut question in Pshat. And the reason why is because ultimately the question will be how to harmonize or reconcile two signals from the Pasuk. Pasuk Gimel, which is the warning, says, Hine Yad Hashem Hoya B'miknecha Asher Basadeh. So the forecast of Dever is that it will be against the livestock, which is Basadeh. That's how it's expressed. Now, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, in Pasuk Vav, it says, Vayomos Kol Miknei Mitzrayim. All the Miknei Mitzrayim died. So now, the question is, these two cannot be in both entirely compatible. Because on the one hand, if the pasuk was mentioned only the mikneh asher basodeh, the implication is that there will be some mikneh that will be spared. If the second pasuk says that they all die, that means that even those that weren't in the sodeh. So that means that there is no way that both of these can account for everything. And if that's true, then the question is, which of them sets the tone, and which of them, in a sense, revolves around that? And what I mean to say is, so if we look at Rashi and read a few words of Rashi, we'll appreciate where he's coming from. It says, and this is on Pasuk Yud, for the next Makkah, the Redi Shechin, is forecast against the Behema. And Rashi asks, "V'im toma, may ein ha'ilhem behemos? Where do they have any animals from? V'alo kvar ne'ema v'yomos kol mikne Mitzrayim? In the last Makkah, all the livestock already died. So who could be left for Shechin? Ela, says Rashi, lo nigzera gezera ela an osan shebasados bilvad. The plague of Dever was only targeting or directed against the mikneh that was in the sodah. As indeed it says, the pasuk says, b'miknecha asher basodah. And therefore, says Rashi, so if you had any sense of preserving your animals, you'd bring them in. What is the point of Rashi? Rashi is telling us that as much as Pasuk Vav says they all died, but the notion of all has already been qualified for us. In other words, all of those that were targeted originally, as indeed it was said in the beginning, b'miknecha asher basodeh. So when it says v'yomas kol mikneh Mitzrayim, don't think that it means every single animal, but rather all of those that were in the original prediction. So the tone has been set by Pasuk Gimel, and is merely being borne out by Pasuk Vav. Interestingly, and by the way, if this is true, then I think it creates a great wonder for us, because actually this will be spoken about more expressly at the end of the Parsha, in Makas Borod, final Makkah of number 7 of this week's Parsha, where Moshe says, tell people to bring their things inside, to bring their animals inside, otherwise there'll be trouble. And that's how the psukim are. Call her Adam Vabahema. Ashe Matseba Sadeva Leosefa Baisa, Vieradalem Habarat Vamesu, says Rashi, says Moshe. Tell them. So it's interesting, because according to Rashi, there's already been such a distinction. In other words, the earlier Makkah of Dever also had this, you know, if they're outside, they'll be targeted. If they're inside, not. But there was no warning. No one ever said, and to tell them to bring them inside. It's only in the later plague that he's saying, tell your people to bring them inside. And what's amazing also is, in Pasuk Kaf and Kaf Aleph, Hayari es Devar Hashem, me'avdei paro. So those that were God-fearing, it, he actually gives us their descriptions. I mean, some people listened. Hey, nisus avodah ves mikneh olabatim. They didn't want to be hailed on, so they brought everything inside, like Moshe Rabbeinu said. That's if they were God fearing. Vashel lo sam libo al devar Hashem. But people who didn't care, people who paid no attention, vayazov es avodah ves mikneh basodeh, they left their stuff in the field. Now that takes a certain thick skin to leave your animals in the field. In modern Hebrew, there's a classic poetic expression called a dafkanik. And that basically is what we're talking about. Asher lo som libol devar Hashem. It's plague number 7. Everything has come true. And you leave your animals out in the field. What's interesting is, we've mentioned in the past, the Medrash actually puts names to faces. The Pasuk talks about in the one who feared God, and the one who paid no attention. Who's the one who feared God? As we know, Paro had a very interesting panel. Originally a panel of 3, subsequently a panel of 2. His original panel, where he discussed the Jewish question, had Eov, Yisro, and Bilam. I mean, that's a very interesting assembly of people. And they were all in his in that original conference. Yisra ran away, and he got his Sachar. Eov kept quiet, which was considered incorrect to have kept quiet, but he was ultimately a God-fearing person. He is a God-fearing person. Sefer Eov begins by describing him as a God-fearing person. And Bilam, of course, was not. Says the Medrash. So the Pasuk describes two types of people. The God-fearing person brought his things inside. And the one who paid no attention, he left his things outside. Says the Medrash. Hayari estevar Hashem ze Eov. He's a God-fearing person. He knows what's what. Va'asher lo som libo el devar Hashem. So, says the Medrash, that's Bilam. And in fact, there's a classic vort that relates to a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Because, when Parshas Balak, as we know, when Bilam goes with Sari Moav, so he leaves on a donkey, on his ason, on his donkey. And the Gemara says that Sari Moav, who of course were on their mighty steeds, and here's the wizard, and he's on a lowly donkey. So they said to him, don't you have a horse? Amar Lahu, he said to them, Beretiva Shadoi, I left it in the field. Now, the Balabatisha Shaila is, look, you know, they're not moving without you, go and get it. But the Sefer Yalkut HaUrim says, based on the Medrash, no, that he's not saying I left it in the field locally. I left my horses in the field. They got hailed to death. So all I'm left with is my donkey. Beretiva Shadoi, based on that Medrash. In any case, but what we do see is that, so not only is it much more explicitly spoken about in Makas Barad, but what's amazing is, according to Rashi, they have already experienced an inside-outside divide. In other words, they've already experienced in Makkah number 5 that if it's outside, it will be killed. And if it's inside, it won't. And still there were people who left it outside. I mean, that's almost a supernatural koach. So this is the approach of Rashi. Once again, to be clear, that on the one hand, it says, Miknach Asher Basodeh. Will be killed. So when it says kol mikne mitzrayim, it means, as per above, all mikne basode. The Ramban takes a different approach. And the Ramban says, as far as he's concerned, when it says kol mikne mitzrayim, it means kol mikne mitzrayim. In other words, that's the definitive statement, kol mikne mitzrayim. When the Pasuk originally said mikne asher basode, so it doesn't mean to say only those that are in the field, but the mikneh is in the field, like you would say, kiyerek asev, and you would do the way that you would describe things, you describe livestock as the mikneh asher basodeh. But it doesn't mean to say only the ones in the field. And perhaps one could say support for the Ramban is the fact that there was no, as we mentioned before, there was no follow-up to say, so tell them to bring their animals inside, because it wasn't making a difference at this stage. So mikneh asher basodeh is not the main concern at all. It refers to all of them. The reason why there can yet be animals that survive, even though the Pasuk says in Pasuk Vav, Vayomos kol mikne mitzrayim, is very simply, says Ramban, because there is a principle in Torah of rubo kukulo. Rubo kukulo means, as much as the Torah uses the expression kol, it does not always mean without exception, unless the Pasuk says without exception. But the usage of the word kol can often mean as much the majority as anything else. That's why when we mean to say absolutely all, we normally double it over. That's the famous comment of the Taz and the Tfilas of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Malocha kol ha'olam kulo b'chvodecha, says the Taz. In other words, when we double over kol ha'olam kulo, it means not rubo kukulo, not halachic rove, the whole thing. Kol ha'olam kulo. And moreover, we say, v'chol harisha kulo ke'ashan tichle, it's exactly the same thing. Not a halachic kol. So, this is the pshat debate between Rashi and Ramban to understand how there could yet survive any animals to endure the further makos. But what was the status, what was the situation with regards to Bnei Yisrael? Well, as we know, in Pasuk Zion, Vayishlach Paro, v'hinei lo meis mimikne Yisrael ad echad, from Yisrael, and that's of course very specific, no one, right? None of them had been impacted. Okay. What does the Pasuk then say? Vayichbad leiv Paro, his heart was heavy. In other words, I mean, that's, none of them were suffered, and Paro ignored it. Vayichbadli Paro velo shilach es ha'am. Now, there's an interesting the expression here. It says, v'hine lo meis mimikne Yisrael ad echot. Translate literally, none of the livestock of the Jews died. Ad echot, even one, ad echot. What does that mean, ad echot? Says the Ibn Ezra, it means not even one. How do I know that? Because look at the previous pasuk. Pasuk Vav says, umimikne b'nei Yisrael, lo meis echad, right? Means not even one died. You know, there's an interesting question. Whenever you see the word ad in the Torah, ad v'ad bichlal, or ad v'lo ad bichlal, up to and including, or up to, but excluding. But here it's clear, because Pasuk Vav has already told us that not even one, lo meis echad. So then when Paro sees lo meis ad echad, it means up to and including. I mean, none of the livestock of the Bnei Yisrael was impacted, and nonetheless he ignored it. I mean, in spite of that, vayichbad lev Paro. However, we should know that there are those who understand that the situation is somewhat different. We have another instance where the term speaks about nothing happened ad echad. And there we see that Chazal actually do, or certain opinions amongst Chazal, understand it means up to, but excluding. Those that drowned in the Yam Suf, the Parshas B'Shalach, Lo Nish'ar Bahem, Ad Echad. No one was left. Ad Echad, says the Michilta, but there was one exception. He is the Echad. In other words, no one survived until this one. That's Paro. Paro went on yet to live. And in Shiras Devora as well, which is the Haftarah for Parshas B'Shalach, also when the Sisra's army was wiped out, no one survived. Ad Echad, says the Medrash, Sisra himself, is the Echad. So until him, no one survived. But he is Sisra. He survived. Now, if that's true, we have a problem. In other words, that should be impossible. Because then we have a contradiction between two psukim, one after the other. The first pasuk said, Mimikne b'nei Yisrael lo meis echad, not even one. So you know that not even one, there's no exceptions. So then clearly when the next pasuk says, lo meis ad echad, you know it means up to and including. How is it possible to understand that expression? It's up to and excluding. That would be a contradiction to the verse beforehand. Now, there is a very interesting discussion. It's a very broad discussion. We can only take a look at one slice of it, but it's a fascinating question. It's a branch of the question of as to how exactly to view the Jewish people before Matan Torah. Is there such a thing as the Jewish people before Matan Torah? That is to say, when we ask the question, who is Jewish? What does it mean to be Jewish? How do you become Jewish? So who was the first Jew? And when did the Jewish people become the Jewish people? Leaving aside the nomenclature of the Jewish people per se, but how do we become Yisrael? On the one hand, the Talmud seems to indicate in a number of occasions that the Jewish people only certainly became fully Jewish at Matan Torah. When the Torah was given to us, that's when we became the Jewish people. V'lakachti eschem li la'am. There are certain halachas of geirus, of becoming Jewish, that are learned from Matan Torah. But of course, Avram Avinu is called Rishon Legerim, Trila Legerim, in the Gemara Chagiga and Daf Hei. And it's a very complicated question, and many, many treatises have been written about this. But what's interesting is, there is another question. Even if we understand that the Jewish people, let us call them for argument's sake, the pre-Jewish people, that is to say, there is no question that they are a distinct people, and they and no others are headed to become fully the Jewish people, what defines whether you're part of that people? As we know, Jewish identity is matrilineal. If your mother is Jewish, you're Jewish. If she isn't, you're not. Even if your father's Jewish, goes after the mother. That's the halacha. Says the Ramban in Parshas Emor, he quotes Chachmei Tzarfat, which is actually the Balei HaTosfos, he quotes about the Chachamim of France, the Balei HaTosfos, and they are of the opinion that this notion that Jewish identity is fixed by the mother was something that was initiated at Matan Torah. But prior to Matan Torah, as Jewish as the Jews were, it depended on the father, not on the mother. And this has ramifications. It's arguably the explanation of a Teras Kohanim for when we have the very difficult case of the son of Shlomo Bas Divri, who, if we know the background of the story, his mother was Jewish, she's Shlomo Bas Divri. His father wasn't Jewish, his father was the Mitzri. Now the Pasuk says, Vayetzei betoch b'nei Yisrael. So he emerged into b'nei Yisrael. And the Teras Kohanim says, Melamed shenis gayer. That means that he converted to Judaism. Now the question, of course, is, well, why does he need to convert to Judaism? His mother's Jewish. Except, say the Bale Atosos, at that defining time, he was born before Matan Torah, he goes after the father, not the mother. His father wasn't Jewish. He actually needed a Geirus more than, in addition to whatever the Jewish people went through at Ma'amad Har Sinai. That's how the Chachmei Tzarfat understand. Ramban argues with them, and Ramban says, no, it was always after the mother. He has a different parish in the Teras Kohanim, and further details will need to wait until Parshas Emor. Says the Sefer Kehilas Yitzchak, if we wish to understand how it could be that on the one hand, the Pasuk says, none of the livestock of any Jew was harmed. That's Pasuk Vav. Umimikne b'nei Yisrael lo meis echad. Anyone from the b'nei Yisrael, none of their livestock was killed, with no exceptions. But then you have the very next pasuk which says, Paro sent out to survey, and lo and behold, lo meis mimikne Yisrael ad echad. None of the Jews were harmed, their livestock, ad echad. And ad echad, according to many in Chazal, means with one exception. But who could be the exception? The pasuk says there were no exceptions. It's true, there were no exceptions, but that wasn't known to Paro, because he didn't know that one of the people that he considered to be Jewish was not Jewish. And that's the son of Shlomo Bas Divri. And therefore, when he looked at that and he saw, one of them suffered, he didn't realize the reason why he suffered is halachically, he was not considered to be Jewish at that time. That is the resolution of the reality of no exceptions, but Paro saw there was one exception. And all of this is merumas in the words of Chazal in Vayikra Rabbah. For this woman who is of some notoriety, and her name is Shlomis Bas Divri. Why is she called Shlomis? It's nice, Shlomis. She said hello to too many people. Why is she called Bas Divri? Once again, spoke too much. Says one opinion in Vayikra Rabbah. Why Veloma Nikre Shema Divri Sheheviya Dever Albino? What does that mean? Says Akilas Yitzchak, it means this. She brought who was considered to be at that time someone non-Jewish into the world. And therefore, her son, he was the Ad Echad, he was the exception to Dever. Heviya Dever Albino. And if that's the case, then that was the one exception. Therefore, when the Pasuk says, Vayichbad Lev Paro, Paro's heart was hardened, because all he needs is one exception. And already, that's the exception that for him proves the rule. The rule is Paro's right. And as much as his nation, their cattle is, and livestock is dropping like flies, and the Jewish people, nothing. With one exception, one is a very large number as far as Paro is concerned. It's all he needs to make them through until the next plague. That's Vayichbad Lev Paro. As the Parsha continues into next week, we'll leave it over there for this evening. We have a minute.